Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Dorsey. I am with Tristan Luking, Sarah Mealy, Chuck Fuller, and Ben Jones. And this is the first podcast that we're doing that's on the cryptocurrencies. And we wanted to have DWA step out on this limb because one of the things that we do here at Dorsey, Wright & Associates, I think better than anyone else in the world, is the charting. And with this charting, Ben, you mentioned that there's no fundamentals here to deal with. It's only price change. Well, we have potentially, Tristan, 1,000 different different currencies. I wouldn't say currencies, coins.
Crypto assets.
Yeah.
That's a good way to think about it. Yeah.
Crypto assets that we're going to be able to have charts on, which is going to be so unique, being able to put those into matrices and do the interesting things that we do technologically with stocks. It's going to be fantastic. And what we're doing here is this kind of like, we probably should be doing this from a brewery. You know, when we're sitting around and having a few beers and talking about this, we wanted to get this going. And so let's start about talk about what this is. Chuck, in as far as Bitcoin is concerned, if you were talking to a high school kid, what might you say to him?
As to what Bitcoin is, I mean, it's really a, they call it a cryptocurrency. It's a digital form of cash. I think that's the best way to look at it because it, to me, the long-term, my long-term view of Bitcoin is that it can possibly replace cash, right, at some point way down the line. But it functions like cash in the sense that cash is fairly anonymous, right? I can give you $5 and government doesn't know about it. Nobody needs to know about it. Well, you can do a similar thing online with Bitcoin. I can anonymously give you 5 Bitcoin, right? And it's the same type of thing. Nobody can really trace it. So that to me is kind of why Bitcoin exists. I remember the first time that I ever heard about it, it had to do with the Silk Road website, which was this kind of dark web website where people could go in and basically buy black market products, weapons and drugs and crazy stuff, right? And as a footnote in that article that I was reading, they were saying, well, how are people actually buying this? And people aren't using cash to do it because, you know, the feds would come in and get them. Well, they're using Bitcoin because you could anonymously send money with Bitcoin.
And Bitcoin was, what, the first decentralized kind of currency, right, or one of them?
Right.
And where does it come from? Is it it's blockchain, right? It's the incentive behind the blockchain process?
Right. So, and it's, so Bitcoin isn't necessarily the incentive itself. So any coin is an incentive to mine off the blockchain. Now we're kind of getting into the weeds a little bit there.
We need to retract a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back more to the beginning. Ben, you were doing some research and found that in 1996 the government was looking was.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, one reason we're talking about, you know, cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin today because it feels like a recent phenomenon.
Right.
Right. I mean, you look at just the performance of Bitcoin, all these other Litecoin, all these other currencies that we'll talk about. Up 3,000-4,000% in a day or a week or a year. But it's a phenomenon that's been going on for years, and it's an area that has been studied not only in financial markets and technology, but also in, you know, our federal government agencies like the NSA have been looking at it. So there was a paper that was kind of circulated around in social media that actually looked at how MIT and the NSA were discussing and talking about ways of developing cryptocurrencies back in 1996. So here we are in 2017 talking about what feels like a really new development that's been around for almost over 20 years, right? At least the concept behind it.
It just makes me think of a pot that you turn the heat on, and it took a while for the pot to boil.
Right, yeah.
And the more you watched it wouldn't boil. Then all of a sudden the pot hit a boil, and that's like 2017.
Right.
Tristan, what do you think where we are now with the cryptocurrency? There's so much interest out there. You can't go anywhere. In fact, you were at lunch and someone saw your badge that you worked at NASDAQ.
Yeah.
And this lady said, tell me about crypto.
I was getting some Chinese food and this lady just sees my NASDAQ badge and she asked me, you know, what do you think about cryptocurrency? Should I get rid of my Amazon? I work at Amazon. Right. Should I get rid of my Amazon stock and trade it for Bitcoin? And I didn't give her an answer because
No, how do you answer that?
How do you answer that? That's a very hard thing to answer on the spot.
The crazy thing is that, I mean, I would say just in the last week and a half to 2 weeks, everybody has a story like that now.
Yeah, yep,
I mean, we were at the DWA holiday Christmas party, And, you know, or we're sitting there talking about Bitcoin, and the waiter, you know, starts chiming in with us. Oh, I'm trading Litecoin. I'm up 80% this week, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking, that's wild.
I've seen this before. You know, I was at the pool hall the other night, and usually when I go to the pool hall, I mean, I'm asked about Bitcoin, and this night I wasn't. Last Monday night, nobody asked me. Until I walked out the front door to get in my car, was finished playing, and a guy followed me out, and he said, Tom, he said, I need to talk to you for a second. And it was the kind of question, say, the statement, like, I'm getting divorced, I need right. some information from somebody who's older. And he said, Bitcoin. He said, what is it? I said, oh, my God. The whole night nobody asked me until I walked out the door, and then he followed me out to the car, which... It happened.
It happened to you too, Sarah, something like that.
Yeah, actually, I went to, well, first my dad. That was interesting. And then I went to a tacky sweater party for my little neighborhood this weekend. Three people came up to me and started talking about it. And then last night, even at the dog park, it's right when Bitcoin Cash got on Coinbase. And two people that have, they don't even really understand the stock market at all, but they're sitting there with their phones out. You know, oh my gosh, did you just see that dip? You know, I have a friend that just made X amount of dollars of cryptocurrency. You know, tell me more. I don't have time to sit here and watch my phone all day. How am I going to do this going forward?
Well, let's discuss something that everyone's thinking about. Tristan, when opening accounts, you know, the problem that people have is one fellow that I work out with for 28 years, he's been trying to buy some Bitcoin, and he's been unable to make that happen. What's going on here with opening the account?
So it's really the verification systems that these sites have in place to stop criminals from taking people's bitcoins and taking people's credit cards and opening accounts fraudulently is actually making it very difficult. And you saw we opened a few exchange accounts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit further down from Coinbase, but it makes it hard for normal people to go in there and buy anything because they have to basically give proof of their driver's license. They got to figure out how to do a selfie video. That's what we had to do the other day.
We had to do a selfie video, exactly.
You had to take a video of yourself holding your credit card and say this phrase that they told you to say. And that's the kind of stuff that people are dealing with.
That's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
I mean, if you think about it, when I just mentioned that study in 1996, can you imagine being in 1996 saying, you know, people were afraid to even put their credit cards online back then, buy something online. And now all of a sudden we're doing video with your credit card and your voice and your face,
exactly,
handing it over to the dark pool of the internet. And that's the only way to access it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's a big fear. I mean, was it last night the Korean exchange that was hacked had a shutdown?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even some of these, you know, established exchanges have been hacked and have their security compromised.
It was UBIT, yeah. I think. They were hacked pretty badly, and they had to shut down completely.
So there is that risk. But again, there's risk.
But it
risk
doesn't
anyway.
Seem that anybody cares about that.
Right.
No.
That doesn't make the news.
That's what blew my mind yet last night, is I have a neighbor that was like, hey, you know, I've given away my lease agreement. I've sent copies of my license. I don't know who I've sent this to. I just want to get set up. I don't know what I'm missing out on. I'm just taking this risk.
FOMO.
It's insane to me.
So on another podcast, we should probably talk about companies that engage in identity theft insurance and security.
Yeah, really. Well, this goes back.
You need to be careful out there with all of these different...
Yes. When you think about the dot-com craze, that most of you were still in high school or grade school or born. Were you born then? That was the wildest thing that I had ever seen. Now, I lived through all the crazes that you can think of in 43 years. I've been around. I've seen it all. I remember when the gambling stocks just went crazy. Resorts International went from $7 to $395 before you could turn around. And I remember one of my clients wanting to buy Resorts International at $7, and our firm had a negative report on it and said, no, it's not ranked as a buy. And all he did was come back to me one day, and when the price was at $395, and just asked for a quote on Resorts International. And I'd kept it, and I'd prevented him from buying it. I've seen all of these things happen, and it's not that they all end in a bad situation. When you look at the dot-com craze, it was all about technology. You know, I remember when Hanes said, we're going to sell our underwear online. Wow, stock goes crazy. It was all on the come. The technology then. People bought into it. Doctors left their practices to go trade these new types of stocks. And in 2000, it all came down. But the point with that is that it was a transition period from what might happen, technology on the come, to stocks that did have technology. Now you buy Amazon, $1,100 a share, and it's got real technology, it's got real business. I mean, back then it was all on the come. You bought Cisco Systems. Cisco Systems, you could come into work in the morning, you buy Cisco Systems at 60, you go home at night and it's at 80. Okay, that's normal. That was normal. Now Cisco Systems has finally morphed into one of those real long-term companies that pays a high dividend and has relatively low volatility. Mm-hmm. Microsoft, one of the wildest things you could have traded back then,
yeah,
now becomes a stock you want to have in your portfolio with a high yield and a great future, but it's not going to jump around on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is the same thing that's happening here. Now, there's so many other coins. What other types of things, Tristan?
There's thousands of coins out there. There are coins that you can mine on your computer. Mm-hmm. There are coins that you can have your computer doing scientific research. Millennials will love that. They can be doing good with the scientific research, mm-hmm, and giving back to the community with the scientific research, and they get paid in grid coins. There's so many coins out there.
Well, 1,000 different coins. So. Well, eventually what we're going to have is the data. Now, you and Chuck run the technology here, and tell us about the data that we're going to get. Where do we get that from, and how do we do this? We're going to have all of our charts made up in 1,000 eventually.
Yeah, I mean, right now, so we have three that we actually input manually every day, mm-hmm, which are kind of the big three: Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. Which you can use the word Bitcoin to bring up a chart of Bitcoin, or Ethereum to bring up a chart of Ethereum. So symbology is pretty simple right now. We're going to probably get they have an API on the site where we go to get these prices. And supposedly this API has, you know, prices for all the different coins. So we're going to be looking into getting all those onto the site.
Then we're going to be able to work the relative strengths that we do with these, and I think it's going to be a fantastic service that we're providing.
Yeah, without question, because, you know, it's a market, right, that has buyers and sellers that ultimately allows you to derive a price. And we plot price in a lot of different ways, and you need that objective lens to really cut through it, because how do you study and analyze 100 or 1,000 different cryptocurrencies or crypto assets? It's impossible.
There's no fundamentals. There's no reports. There's no three-piece suit in New York writing a report on it.
Right. So you need a system that will allow you to do that. And I think, you know, the Dorsett Research Platform will allow you to do that, whether you're just tracking the price trends of that crypto asset or the relative performance of, you know, comparing Bitcoin against Litecoin and Litecoin against, you know, any of them using a matrix tool. Right, and so I think our platform, you know, affords that.
I'll tell you what people look at right now is, one, they look at the market cap, which is Bitcoin is just widely – so much higher than everybody else.
Yep.
And they look at the volume, or the trading volume, to see what coin is currently trading high. And then there's losers, there's you know, big pumps, and there's big dumps.
Yeah.
And that's another thing people look into.
Which is essentially a way of, you know, looking at liquidity.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a concern out there.
Well, Chuck, you were talking yesterday about, we've already had crashes in these.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like everyone's sitting back saying, I'm waiting for the crash. We've already been through that.
Yeah, Bitcoin has been around since 2009, and I guess it was about maybe 2013, 2014. Had an 80%, you know, peak-to-trough decline, yeah, right?
That's so significant.
That's a crash, yeah. I like to call that a crash. And so, but, you know, it came back. I think it got down to around $200 per Bitcoin. It got back up. It actually got back up at the beginning of this year to 1,000. Mm-hmm. That's at the beginning of this year, right?
Yeah,
before
exactly.
the exponential move.
Exactly.
You know, now it's wherever it's at, 19,000, 20,000. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, and throughout this whole year, you know, where it's up roughly 2,000%, it's had multiple 30% pullbacks along the way.
Just had a 12% last night.
Like it's nothing.
Exactly.
Just dropped
like
12%.
And that's where it's interesting to me is, you know, And I'll say I'm one that's waiting for some kind of big decline, right? It can't go up exponentially forever. So, but, you know, what is considered a crash, right? If it's gone down 30% multiple times in 1 year, does that have to go down 50% to be a crash? It's got to go down 70%. That's interesting to me because, you know,
it's a new world, because the millennial that's buying these things and the people who are talking out at your dog park and that type of thing don't have a concept of what can happen to a portfolio when something drops big time. So to them, a crash would be, hey, this thing just corrected, you have to buy more.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's actually what happened last night. It dropped 12%, and what's it trading at now? It's trading at 17,000.
Roughly.
So it gained half of that back overnight.
Yeah, so when a millennial looks at that, says, okay, that's a nice little correction. I got to be in there buying. The point is, how much do you buy? And here's the thing. When I ran the option strategy department at Wheat First Securities for 9 years, I had what was called the optimum margin for a trade. When you did an uncovered call or uncovered put, you had a margin requirement by the firm, which was typically 20% of the market value of the stock, plus or minus the amount in or out of the money, et cetera. In other words, we have a minimum margin that you have to put up. Mm-hmm. To me, optimum margin was, I've got to put up 50% of the value of the contract I may be asked to perform on. Mm-hmm. So that if I'm asked to perform on that contract and someone puts me 100 shares of stock, I've got to have the money in the portfolio ready to go that if that happens. If you don't and you have minimum margin, then you could be scrambling. Then you have to sell the stock. You have to do all kinds of things with minimum. Optimum margin is the way you have to think here. So also is not over-leveraging. In other words, how much of an appetite do you have? When the option business first started in 1974, we looked at these as inexpensive stocks. So if you normally would buy 200 shares of a stock back then and put up $4,000, let's say, with the option business, we would talk you into buying 10 contracts and putting up that $4,000 because now we've got the leverage. Well, what I've just done is I've turned you into a 1,000-share buyer. 10 contracts of an option is 1,000 shares, where you would normally have put up the same amount of money and only held 200 shares. That's where the problems began, was the over-leverage part. So when you're looking at these cryptocurrencies, nothing says that you have to go in there and do any big size. Buy a fraction. And the interesting thing about Coinbase is they don't allow you to go in and over-leverage.
Right.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Well, I think it's interesting because it takes a school of thought that the vehicle isn't a means of for speculation, right? That the vehicle is a means as a coin, potentially, a medium of exchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a utility behind these cryptocurrencies for that, where you can exchange one coin for some other good or service, right? I think Coinbase provides that. But it also provides the ability through other exchanges and trading platforms to speculate, right? And so I think, to your point...
So how does that work? When I went in, Tristan, to buy Bitcoin, they allowed me to buy $200.
So by default, I think they allow you to buy $100, and then a few days later they up that in terms of instant credit card transactions, a week. If you want to do a bank transfer, you can wait 7 days. You buy the Bitcoin at the price that you see it at that point. It stays at that price until you get your Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there is that if Bitcoin drops 50%, you're going to come in at that high price. You're going to lose all that money, and you can't do anything about it for 7 days. And there's I think it's $7,500 limit per week on mm-hmm. bank transfers. So they really do limit you in terms of what you can do.
Yeah, so that's almost a self-writing policy.
And that updates, I think they update that the more you use their service.
Mm-hmm. There's a governor on the service. And so, but, you know, you can go outside and, you know, they had the futures where you're able to speculate. So you're familiar with some of the other exchanges out there where, you know, some of your, you know, peers are, you know, trading mm-hmm. these currencies, not only in relation to the U.S. dollar, but probably foreign currencies as well, like different pairs with these cryptocurrencies. So.
I think one thing that's important to kind of backtrack on is what is Coinbase for people that are listening and don't know what Coinbase is. So it's an online platform, for buying and selling, transferring and storing digital currency. And what's interesting about Coinbase is it's a really easy app to use, or there's also an online platform. But your U.S. dollar wallet on Coinbase is FDIC insured up to $250,000.
Okay, explain what does that wallet mean? That's cash.
So
you have U.S. dollars cash,
yes.
Not bitcoins.
Correct. So your Bitcoin would not be covered, but any cash that you have stored in that digital wallet would be covered if something were to happen.
So if you bought
$5,000 worth of bitcoins if you were allowed to get that far, and you own $5,000 worth of bitcoins and you had $200 left in your wallet, the government would cover your $200,
correct,
not the $5,000.
Correct.
And if you sold that $5,000 to USD, you could hold it in your wallet on Coinbase and it would be insured. But your Bitcoin would not be.
Right.
They do not insure the crypto.
So holding a wallet, I mean, how do you actually create a wallet? Is that simple to do on Bitcoin? I mean, on Coinbase?
So Coinbase gives you a wallet for each currency by default.
By default. Okay, so you automatically have that wallet.
Yep.
Now, what we've done is we've opened some other accounts.
There are, the rabbit hole goes a lot deeper than just Bitcoin.
Thank you, Alice.
Exactly. We have had to, in almost all cases, to buy something else, like, let's say, Litecoin, you have to sell some Bitcoin.
Yeah, you can buy Litecoin on Coinbase.
On Coinbase.
But Ripple, something like Ripple, which a lot of people are interested in right now, you cannot buy on Coinbase.
You have to sell the Bit. Now, I bought some Ripple yesterday, and I had to sell some Bitcoin.
So what you have to actually do is...
Which was very minimal.
You buy Bitcoin on Coinbase, and then you have to transfer your Bitcoin from Coinbase to another exchange that's selling Ripple. And then on that exchange, you use your Bitcoin to purchase the Ripple. So it's almost like Bitcoin on these other exchanges is kind of the currency for buying these other crypto assets.
Yeah, it, like you said, the rabbit hole gets deeper
and deeper. It gets a lot deeper.
Deeper.
Yeah,
Ripple is a hot name, too, at the dog park. Something that was brought up last night.
Why is it? Why is that a hot name?
Apparently they've teamed up with American Express.
Yeah.
That was something that I heard last night. I haven't really looked into it, but
it could also be that it's up 12,000% this year.
Yes.
It's a momentum play.
Yeah. Isn't this what the banks are using, though?
Chinese banks. I think the Asian banks are actually utilizing this pretty heavily right now. U.S. banks have not taken it up yet.
They will.
And when they do, the price could skyrocket. But
let's talk for a second about the blockchain. Finally, I understood it. Mm-hmm. It took me a long discussion with you, Chuck, to understand it, about finding a needle in the haystack. What does this blockchain mean? What is a block? What's going on here?
Right. So I think to really have this discussion, you kind of got to back it up to what happens when you create a digital currency, right? So what could be some of the problems with that, right? You think with physical currency, it could be counterfeited. Right, and so the government puts all kinds of protections in, holograms and crazy watermarks on the currency, all kinds of things to keep you from being able to counterfeit it. But what in the digital realm, how does that work? Because it's real easy to copy something, to take a file on your computer. You can copy it in a fraction of a second, right? So what's to keep everybody from just making millions of copies, billions of copies of their Bitcoin? Or their Ethereum.
So in other words, it's like taking your $100 bill and saying, okay, I'm going to spend this $100 bill, but I'm also going to Xerox another 100 copies of this.
Yeah.
And you send it to each one of us. And now we all have the same dollar bill.
Right.
Now in our currency system, we can't.
You can't do that.
So, and that's been a problem. So, I mean, digital currency, the idea behind it has been around for a long time, probably about almost 40 years, right? But that was always kind of the thing. How do you keep people from being able to counterfeit or double spend, right? And that's kind of where that was the innovation with Bitcoin in 2009. This guy named Satoshi Nakamoto, who nobody even knows who this guy is, right? He created Bitcoin, and in his white paper that describes it, he also talks about the blockchain and how that kind of prevents the double spending. So one of the things behind that is that, and everybody's probably heard it, but not a lot of people, I think, really understand it, is the mining aspect, right? So, and to me, it's kind of like... gold mining in a way, right? So there's a natural block on the amount of gold that's going to come out of the ground at any one time. And what's that natural block? Well, it's, gold miners have to do a lot of work to get that gold out of the ground. They can't just say, oh, you know what? All this gold that's in the ground, I'm going to snap my fingers and 5 seconds later, it's all going to be out.
No. So they would get the easy gold first.
Yep.
Right.
With all the surface in the
room. Then it becomes harder and harder. Then you've got to use the pick. Then you've got to use drills.
That's more or less the way that the creator of Bitcoin set up Bitcoin mining, right? So, but it's different. In the digital realm, there's not any kind of, millions of tons of rock I got to blast through to get to the Bitcoin, right? So what he did is he did the digital equivalent. He made an algorithm that is incredibly hard for a computer to solve, right? Basically without just randomly guessing. And so what ends up happening is in order to do a Bitcoin transaction, a miner will take all these different transactions. He could take about roughly 2,000 of them. He groups them into a block.
Okay.
Right?
So my vision, let's stop there for a second. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden when I understood this, I think of a train. And you watch the train, and the train has different cars that go, you know, some might be coal, some might be whatever.
Right.
But in that car, you take one of those cars on the train. Mm-hmm. That's what he's filling up.
Yeah, he's filling
one
up
of those,
that
it's
car.
A block or a car.
With transactions. You know, let's say I gave you 5 Bitcoins, I gave Sarah 10, mm-hmm. I gave Tristan 5, whatever. He's taking all those transactions, he's grouping them into a block and filling up that train car.
And once he gets how many, 2,000?
Yeah, once he gets to about 2,000, that's about as many as Bitcoin allows you to put into a block or into a train car, right? And so then, but see, there's a lot of miners out there. And what has to happen is they have to verify these transactions and then put that block into the blockchain. Or, and the analogy, put the train car on the train, mm-hmm. right? But they can't just do that. They can't just say, okay, well, I'm just going to do that, right? They have to do what's called, they call it a proof of work algorithm. And that's this needle in the haystack concept, right? They have to basically run this algorithm, which is incredibly hard. It's they've got to basically randomly guess, there's like 10 to the 21st power times, which that's not even, that's like a billion trillion times. I mean, you can't even fathom it. Right.
It's the number of stars in the sky.
Yeah, it's like the trying to pick one star out of all the stars in the sky. So
if it was a visual you would have, it's like a haystack. And there's a needle in that haystack.
Right.
And that needle, you have to guess, is 10 feet down from the top, 1.3 feet from the center, you know, and more numbers in there to figure out exactly where it is.
Now, what makes that fair is that there's no hint as to where this needle is. Right, it's not like you could guess 1 centimeter away from that needle, and there's nothing to tell you that the needle's right there.
Right,
right. You just got to keep randomly guessing.
Doesn't tell you that you're getting closer.
Yeah, yeah. You got to keep randomly guessing. Right, and that's how it ensures that the computer does a set amount of work to get it. Right, so that slows down. Now, what happens is once they do find that special number, that special needle in the haystack, well, then they can say, okay, well, I've verified this this block, and I can put it on the blockchain. Now it becomes a legitimate transaction.
So those 2,000 transactions in that block, that train car,
right.
is legitimate now.
Right.
We found them.
Right.
You know, Tom Dorsey bought 1 Bitcoin. Okay,
right.
It's there. We saw that he did it. And now, we see that, Tristan, when you help me open accounts, and I buy something there, you see that... It doesn't happen automatically.
Yeah.
What you're waiting for is, in one case, we had to have 6 verifications.
Usually it's 6 confirmations to tell the system that this is okay. That your transaction has been seen the same way 6 times in a row in the blockchain.
Verified and audited, verified. Essentially. Yep. Yeah.
It's been audited. Verified and audited.
Mm-hmm.
Additional miners have verified it.
Go ahead,
after.
I jumped in.
Yeah, yeah. So... Once they solve it, right, that allows them to put the train car onto the train, the block
mm-hmm.
onto the blockchain.
Right.
Yeah, so and then at that point, everything's verified, and you're ready to go, and then they're searching for the next one. And so the way this works with Bitcoin is that there's only a set rate at which they can find these things, right? It's not like if you have, you know, incredibly fast computers, you can... mine more of these things. And actually, back up 1 second to say that once you solve that that function, once you solve it and you can put the block on the blockchain, you get right now 12.5 Bitcoins.
Right. So there's an economic incentive.
That's the mining part of it, right? So they're basically, it's 12.5 Bitcoins that's created out of nothing, right? It's not like you got them from somebody else. These are truly new Bitcoins that are going into the ecosystem. Now, you see so many people doing it right now because take 12.5 times the current price of Bitcoin, that's roughly $200,000 that you're getting.
Right. Okay, so it's kind of like a miner finding gold back in the day.
Exactly.
And he finds $200,000 worth of gold, and he, in essence, brings it to the U.S. Treasury.
Yep.
And the U.S. Treasury says, okay, thanks for the gold. Now we'll print $200,000 worth of more dollars because it's backed by gold.
Mm-hmm.
Except now the dollar's backed by nothing.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
well, but that's what's interesting, Chuck, that, you know, for the past, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, the conversation has mostly been about blockchain.
right?
As the technology, the new frontier that's going to transform finance and real estate and accounting and basically everything that you touch in modern society. Now all of a sudden it's done a 180 and the conversation's on Bitcoin and speculation.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting that.
And that's the thing is, in my view, the long play is the blockchain. It's not necessarily Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that could be done with the blockchain that, yeah, potentially could transform a lot of things. Now, I don't think it's necessarily consumer-facing kind of things. Usually, the idea with the blockchain is that it's a decentralized ledger, or almost like a decentralized database in a way, right? And so there's everything that I'm reading about it, it seems like there's a lot of wherever you have a middleman somewhere, and he's basically a middleman because he's some kind of trusted source, right? Maybe it's the, you know, the guy who you get your title from for your car or for your house or something like that. Any kind of middleman like that, where he's basically just a centralized authority keeping track of some data, could go away and be all put on the blockchain, right? And so it potentially could create a society where you just doing all kinds of transactions becomes much more efficient than it is right now because you're cutting out middlemen.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea behind it.
There. And you have to have that. I mean, if the modern economy and modern society is truly digitized,
mm-hmm.
it's the only way.
Yeah.
Well, right. As of today.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Right. So that to me is a long play. You know, it's a fun year watching Bitcoin do all this kind of stuff and everything, but I think in, you know, 10 years we'll be talking more about, you know, whatever the coin is at that point, it's really turned into the killer app of mm-hmm, the blockchain. Yeah. And everybody talks about, you know, back in the day, like Excel was the killer app for Windows or whatever. There's going to be some killer app for the blockchain that maybe exists right now. Maybe it's one of these 1,000 cryptocurrencies.
Maybe it's already come, yeah.
Maybe it's already come. We don't know. Maybe it is Bitcoin. I don't know. It's hard to say. But it'll be something. For sure, we'll be talking about it in 10 years.
What are some of the other ones, Tristan, before you have to go on a conference call, some of the other types of cryptocurrencies? Because it's so unique. When you mentioned to me that it's not just trading these currencies back, that's all everyone's talking about, where you can do good and do well, like you said. You can loan your computer. I don't know how you do this, but you can loan your computer out at night, daytime, for science to use, and they'll pay you in that currency.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
So that one is called Gridcoin.
Gridcoin.
You give your computer to science, and they pay you in Gridcoins.
So you're not jumping in here trading like crazy and
no, actually, doing something just to jump back to what Chuck said, I actually agree with him that I don't have anything in Bitcoin. I think it's kind of a wild ride right now that I don't want to be a part of, and I think there are coins out there that have more potential than Bitcoin.
Yeah. Mention a couple.
The big one that I'm in is Extrabytes.
Extrabytes.
It's very low right now on the totem pole. It has a different algorithm than Bitcoin. It does a proof of signature, which is anybody can buy into a static node, and the static node network all connects to each other, and they sign these things as they come in, and it's just a different way of doing the blockchain.
And so you're looking at the technology.
I look at
it's
that's
not
what
that,
I do.
It's
with
not
this
that
stuff,
you're looking to trade this thing back and forth. You accumulate
exactly. There's another one called Sia Coin.
Sita?
Sia.
S-I-A.
S-I-A. And it's a very interesting one. It rivals Amazon's S3 and Google's cloud storage.
Interesting.
You take your computer, you have hard drive space you want to give out to other people to store their stuff decentralized. You get paid in Sia Coin.
So you're not trading that either?
No.
I mean, you're doing something, you're doing good for the world,
yep.
And you're getting paid coins for that.
Yep.
I mean, that makes a tremendous amount of sense.
You're providing a service.
I don't know if they'll use my TRS-80.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, years before, was it SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial
and that's
Intelligence?
One of the things you can actually utilize.
Yeah, before, I mean, you could download a program on your computer,
right.
And they would use your storage and computing power to, you know, run satellites and scan the universe. But you weren't getting paid.
It was volunteer-based.
It was volunteer.
You just have a screensaver, and it looked pretty cool.
It looked pretty cool.
You thought
but
you
now
were helping
you can get compensated with the, you know,
now you get compensated,
so
exactly.
That is interesting. So I guess, Tristan, another question would be, I mean, what prevents someone from just having their own ICO and then creating their own coin? I mean, there's
really
are there
no
barriers to entry?
There is no barrier for entry. You just have to You have to understand the blockchain, find that it's open source, most of this stuff. You can go and find Bitcoin's source code, and you can build it if you want to. You could build your own coin. You got to understand the technology. You got to get into the source code and kind of understand that,
right.
Know your way around building this kind of stuff. But there is no barrier to entry, and that's part of the problem with ICOs.
Yes.
You have to be extremely careful.
Initial coin offering. It's kind of like an IPO.
Exactly.
But the problem is it's not regulated. So you could have some random person create an ICO where you come in, you pay in Bitcoin or Ethereum, you pay them to get a portion of these coins that they've just newly minted on this product that you know nothing about. And then at the very end, they don't actually release anything.
They don't do anything.
You've given them all your Bitcoin.
That may or may not exist.
All your Ethereum, right. All your Litecoin, right. I mean, whatever it is.
Right.
And that's out there.
Yeah. They don't have to do anything. You're just basically giving them your money.
They could have a really slick-looking website, and they could say, hey, we can do all this stuff. It looks really awesome. And then in the end, they don't actually give you anything. But you've given them everything. You got to be careful with ICOs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're everywhere.
They're definitely going to get regulated, and they're already starting to get regulated. But
didn't we hear just recently that people were taking coins that looked like Bitcoin and selling them? Was that
probably fake news?
Was that fake news?
It was a joke. I can almost picture that. Yeah,
I'm sure somebody's doing it
probably,
somewhere.
It probably was fake news.
Yeah.
But I'm picturing like up in Times Square, somebody selling Bitcoins, you know. And
I have a purse full of gold coins right now from a local. Arcade. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
It's an issue. I mean, again,
things aren't always what they seem.
You know, the ironic point here is that, you know, Bitcoin and blockchain was created to, you know, foster trust, right? Mm-hmm. To enhance trust, right? You couldn't trust, you know, this dollar bill could be counterfeit. You couldn't trust, you know, a seller of a good on the other side of an IP or a firewall, right? But with Bitcoin and blockchain, it allows that, right? Because you know that, hey, we have a ledger that's distributed, that is audited and verified, and the incentive for the blockchain. Well, now you have these issues with trust where,
yeah.
You know, now you have, you know, can you trust this exchange? It's in China or North Korea. You know, is it going to get hacked? Is this a real coin? Is this a real ICO? So, I mean, even though this is, as Chuck, you talked about, I mean, it's fascinating and interesting to watch, you still have to do due diligence.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right, you still have to kind of. You may not know exactly what you're buying, but you need to know kind of, you know, the mechanics behind it and the security protocols that are needed.
I think that's why everybody goes to Coinbase.
Right, exactly.
It's honestly
exactly
the easiest entry point, but it also kind of makes Bitcoin centralized.
Yeah,
it's become the opposite of what Bitcoin was supposed to be.
That's a good point.
Because Coinbase makes it so centralized, just a centralized place. Everybody goes to buy it. That it's now centralized.
It feels safe. It feels secure.
Feels safe and
the
secure.
Most popular
yeah.
app
mm-hmm,
on
mm-hmm.
you know the Apple
yeah.
App Store.
Also
right.
The hardest one to get
right.
to get past.
Well,
yeah.
I think this brings up a point too that it's going to be hard for people to really wrap their minds around the fact that this algorithm of Bitcoin or whatever it is, blockchain, is what. You know, allows that kind of decentralized trust to happen. Normally, you have a trust in another person or an institution that's
right.
based on other people, right? But in this case, it's literally the software that you're trusting to do everything, to do all the auditing, the verifying, all the stuff that we're talking about that no longer has to be done by a centralized authority. It's all being done by software, and that I think that takes a little bit of training, you know, on the customer side of
it. To a certain degree, I don't know how many people get into that. They just want to get into Bitcoin. That's all that they
care
about.
Well, that's
the
speculation
yeah.
side of it, right.
Yeah.
Well, as far as the trading side, then as far as I'm concerned, never over-leverage. I mean, if you put $100 in.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if it goes down $20,000 in a day, it's of no consequence.
Who cares?
To you.
Right.
Which I think is an interesting investment case, right, as we talk about it. And, you know, we shifted early from the term cryptocurrency to crypto asset,
mm-hmm.
right? By viewing it as a long-term play, we're viewing it as its own asset class, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting because now that there are 1,000 coins, I mean, you know, could you theoretically buy, you know, a fraction of, you know, these 1,000
yeah.
coins and hold them for the next 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
And maybe one might
yeah.
turn out to be something legit.
Well, what's the Bitcoin Trust? I mean, the Bitcoin Trust is something I haven't been trading. Because what I've done is I started out over-leveraging by buying 100 shares, which was a $97,000 investment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot for 100 shares.
That way.
And it worked out extremely well for the first couple of weeks, and I sold out. I took my profit. I went back in again because I couldn't stand to be out.
Right.
And here's the psychological thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to book my profit. Then I'm out for a day, so I got to get back in. I get back in with 100 shares. It gets ugly. Then I have to average in another 50 shares, and that saves me by the end of the day. But I had still a substantial loss that most investors would say, wow, I can't take that. I wasn't going to take it home. So I took that loss. But the next day I came back in, I said, I got to get in this again. How am I going to do it? I'm not going to over-leverage. I'm going to buy 10 shares.
Right.
And at 10 shares, great. Then as it went down again on me, I averaged another 10 shares in.
Mm-hmm.
I got 20 whole shares, so what? I don't care what it does. Last night, we're at dinner. My son is telling me, he said, this thing, it's down 6,000. Bitcoin's down $6,000 right now. I said, fine, no problem. I'm not over-leveraged.
Right.
I'm just going to buy more of GBTC because you can trade that. Most firms don't allow you to trade that, though. You go to your Wall Street firm, they're not going to let you own GBT. What is GBTC? It's a trust. It's a Bitcoin trust,
yeah, it's a
right?
Bitcoin trust.
Or it's a crypto.
Right.
Crypto.
They own Bitcoin underlying. That's what they own. That's really all they own.
Yeah.
So.
One confusion, I think, is that it directly tracks the price of Bitcoin, and it does not.
It's a beast unto itself.
You're paying a premium to buy it easily.
Yes, exactly.
If you were to get into an exchange, Coinbase has an exchange called GDAX. If you were to take your Coinbase money and go into GDAX, you would be making exactly what the Bitcoin price is instead of paying the premium. But that's taking the curtain back a little bit. Because you got to understand how to do that first. And that's a whole other thing to understand.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing to understand. And it's simpler to...
The ETF is just an easy way to get into it.
Yeah, it's not an ETF. It's a trust, right? It's not an ETF.
It's not an ETF.
It's not an ETF.
Yeah.
But there are ETFs that are coming out.
Which
we're going to keep you abreast of here. There's no question about it. We're making a commitment in these cryptocurrencies at Dorsey Wright & Associates. The thing about it is, on Charles Schwab, you can trade them, mm-hmm. which is where I trade them. Very simple. Other firms will not allow you to get near them. But the problem is, you know, with one of my friends that called me up and said, my firm will not allow you to trade any of these, the Bitcoin trust. I said, why don't they just sit back and say, look, we're going to lower the leverage on them. We'll let you buy a share or no more than 10 shares. Or just like you would govern an option trading account, govern the account in the GBTC.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't think about that. They just say, okay, we're just cutting everybody out. And that would be like shutting down your option business.
Mm-hmm.
Because options can get out of hand if you're not careful in what you do. We're going to shut the whole business down and not let anyone in. But we can control it. And that's what they need to do, is control the leverage on that. And the beauty of the point and figure chart is you can increase and decrease the box size. And Ben, we were talking about today, you can put a percentage in your chart.
Yeah, normalize the chart. So instead of, you can look at it like a pure dollar scale, right, which is looking at each box size, you incrementally go up, you know, X dollars, right, or whatever the Bitcoin would be worth. You can also use the smart chart feature on our research platform that allows you to adjust the scale of that chart to either another dollar scale or percent scale. So you normalize. So if, as you go up the vertical axis, you might go up 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's useful, especially for more volatile assets like Bitcoin or any of these cryptocurrencies, is that you normalize it. That way it allows you to set better. You can manage risk better because I think visually it's easy to see, hey, this move, you know, going down X number of boxes represents 10% or 20% or 30%. So I think intuitively it's a little bit easier. So definitely recommend doing that. And again, that applies not only for cryptocurrencies, but, you know, any security on our system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember back in the .com craze when Yahoo was trading at 700. Not many people realize that, especially if you don't have some age to you. Yahoo was trading at $700 a share.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me, Yahoo? Well, what we had to do then was make the box size $10 per box to normalize that chart so it looked like a pretty normal chart to you.
Yeah.
But when you looked to the first sell signal, it was like you were gonna give up 60 points. Way too much risk. So what do you do then? You only buy 5 shares of Yahoo at that point at $700 a share. That's how you govern the volatility and govern the risk. Same thing here with the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, it's a space that is going to be changing rapidly.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely, we're going to do our best to keep, you know, listeners out there informed and our subscribers informed. So definitely, it's the new frontier for sure.
Yeah, let us know what you would like us to cover on this, because we don't want to keep you here all day. But we're making a commitment to put out research to you in these cryptocurrencies. DWA is going to be leading edge, and it's going to be a place where you can get honest answers and great charts.
For sure. I think one of the neat things about this space is that if you think about the way that we're structured in our in the office, right? We have a team of research analysts, and we have database programmers and developers. Chuck and Tristan. So it's that perfect merge between Wall Street and Silicon Valley, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I call you guys Silicon Alley in our office. it's the perfect blend between the technical analysts with Silicon Valley, and being able to merge the two. So. I think if we have more of these discussions, and
I'm like Mikey.
Yeah.
give him he'll eat anything. Try it.
Yeah.
But I'm like the average guy. I've got questions. I want to get involved in cryptocurrency, but I can only go so far. And then I've got to ask you, Tristan. And then Tristan comes in. We had to do a video, a selfie video. What the heck? I never even did a selfie before. We did a selfie video, but then you have to save it. Then you have to be able to find it where you save it. Then you got to bring that thing out, and you've got to email it. You have to do certain things right that the average person may not be well versed in as far as computers are concerned, which puts the block on you. I think there need to be some consultants out there.
Some for sure.
Crypto consultants.
So we covered a lot today, right?
Absolutely.
Kind of what is Bitcoin? What is a cryptocurrency? How to trade it? How to invest in it?
What's the blockchain? That's the important thing. How do you find that needle in the haystack and put that box on that train?
Mm-hmm. And then you can't ever change it.
Yeah,
and
it's always in the history.
Once it's done,
it's cemented in time.
I love it. I mean, this is so interesting, and that's why everybody out there is interested in it. I think it's different than the .com craze. This is here to stay.
Funny thing is, this has been here since 2009.
It is.
Yeah.
It's been incognito since 2009.
It's got to go up 2,000%.
then you get everyone interested.
Funny how that works.
Well, we're going to sign off. But, Sarah, one last thing with you. The people that you know and you hang with, I find it so interesting that wherever you go, it's the buzzword.
It is the buzzword. Whether I'm at this holiday party or on Facebook, I'm in some private crypto groups, but that's where I get a lot of my information from. It's just really interesting to see everyone's different take on it. There are people that are actively trading, there are people that are holding, there are people that want to get in that don't know how, or there's, one of my neighbors, he also had the frustration of he was able to easily set up a Coinbase account and he had all this Bitcoin, but then when he went to sell, there was there's a barrier there where he had to then verify more steps to sell. So it's just interesting, all the different conversations, and there is so much information out there that I'm still myself trying to filter through and try to find the best resources and just wrap my head around the concept, but it's very interesting time right now.
I think that is part of another problem with this is that there is so much news that you could turn a fire hose on and you would get all this news, but you wouldn't know what to do with it, and most people will not know where to find this. There was news about this Bitcoin Cash thing before it even happened on Coinbase yesterday, where they added Bitcoin Cash. But the normal person would never know that because they don't follow the news. There's so much news.
So much news, exactly.
But it's hard to find.
And always keep in mind that there are no disinterested people on Wall Street. So when you see a firm come out and say, this is a flash in the pan, this is going to blow up, sit back and think about it. Is this something? Why are they saying these things? Mm-hmm. And most Wall Street firms are saying these things because they can't sell their customers Bitcoin. So why wouldn't you go out and say it's a flash in a pan?
To their point, you do have to be careful because Bitcoin could crash when the next big thing overtakes it.
Absolutely.
Will that be a slow decline or will that just be a crash? We don't know.
Right.
But
we've already had an 80% decline.
It's happened.
It's already happened. This is not. This is not something that we're all waiting for the first time to happen.
Right.
It's already been there.
A lot of the millennials that are in this, they say hold. That's all they say. They just want to hold.
I think that makes sense.
And they may not be the majority of the top stakeholders, but they do make the price go up when it goes down. Because they're getting in even more.
And that's what makes sense to me, is instead of trading it back and forth and looking at your John Wayne trading these things, I'm in here day trading. I've never, in 43 years, never met a day trader yet that ever made any money. Maybe I need to be in the business 60 years, and I might meet some. But 43 years, I've never seen a day trader yet that made any money. Where the real money, I think, here is saying, okay, I'm going to relax.
I'm going to pick up a coin or piece of a coin a week, piece of a coin a month, and I'm not going
to
sweat
onto it
and hold on to it and see what happens in the future. And you might be very surprised. By the same token, maybe the whole thing blows up. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But if you're not over leveraged, it's no big deal.
Exactly.
If you put in what you are willing to risk and what you can afford and still live your life normally, that's
exactly
what you should do.
Big, precisely.
Don't put your
any further
don't sell your home and put the money into Bitcoin.
Right.
It's not a good idea.
No, bad idea.
Be smart.
Uh-oh. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that didn't work.
Talk. Should have told you that before.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We hope to have more discussions like this in the future because it is an exciting space for either speculating or investing for the long term if this becomes a truly new asset class.
The technology is just awesome.
Yeah.
So.
And when that comes from you, I mean, here's the consummate height of technology. When you say the technology is awesome, I don't have to think about it. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chuck came. Told us about this back in 2012. Thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've been looking at this stuff for a while.
Yeah.
It's just now, this year took off.
Right.
So. Well, look to DWA to help keep you abreast of it. All right, we'll catch you next time.